Welcome to Tentpole Trauma, the podcast where we look at movies that came with hype and high hopes, but left with crushing disappointment, either critically, at the box office, or both. Freed from the weight of expectations, we seek to examine these underperformers under a new light, parsing through the good, the bad, and everything in between with the hopes of gaining a better understanding as to why they failed to find their audience. Warning, there will be spoilers, so if you haven't seen the movie that we're discussing today, I suggest you stop the podcast and go watch it. Then when you come back and listen, you'll get more out of the discussion. On this episode, we discuss The Happening. Okay, I am Sebastian, and I'm here with Jennifer.
Hello.
Jennifer is back doing a Just the Two of Us. The fans have demanded more Jen. There just hasn't been enough Jen, so they wanted her back as soon as possible.
Well, here I am.
You got all of December off, so you should feel refreshed.
I am refreshed.
Well, this is going to be quite a happy new year happening because we're discussing M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening. Now, I don't know, a little over a year or so ago, we did Lady in the Water.
That's right.
With Rodney.
Mm-hmm.
Rodney will not be joining us for this fine film, although we may hear about it from him.
You may have some disgruntled fellow hosts.
Well, you know, things are a little more complicated on our end these days because of where we are in the country.
That's
it's
right.
Just harder to get these sort of things scheduled. So it's not, you know, anything against the co-hosts. It's just easier for you and me to come up with one of these and do them off the cuff, you know, loosey-goosey.
So loosey-goosey, yes.
And what better of a loosey-goosey film is there to discuss than The Happening?
Whew.
This is quite a loose goose of a film. Now, I suppose we don't need to get back into talking about M. Night Shyamalan again, because we probably covered that in Lady in the Water, right?
Yes, we definitely covered the history and how I will always give Shyamalan a chance.
He's going to be coming out with a new movie this year, and I imagine that we will be required to see it, right?
Well, yeah, we'll have to see it in the theater, just like we saw Old, which came out after I think we did the Lady in the Water.
That's right.
Podcast. We did see Old in the theater.
We did.
So, yes, his latest film that's coming out, which I don't even think I've seen the trailer. Did we just see posters at the movie or something?
Yeah, I don't think we've seen a full trailer for it. And I can't even remember what it's called.
No, I can't either. Or it was like, if it was something very abbreviated.
Yeah.
And I think I saw, you know, the movie poster at the theater.
Well, I think the thing that's important to sort of touch upon this go around the Shyamalan rodeo, and look, we may end up discussing more Shyamalan films because he tends to swing big with his concepts, and sometimes they really fall flat on their faces and don't make any money at the box office or are critically reviled. And I would say that this movie is kind of the beginning of this sort of phase in his career where he's doing these sort of ridiculous high concept types of movies that, like, Old, I think, is sort of similar to this, just because it has this kind of wackadoo premise of there's this island where everybody's just aging unnaturally. I feel like Old and this movie share a commonality, and that is that there's at the heart of it a really bizarre, almost science fiction type of conceit. When Shyamalan talks about this movie, he tries to play it off like, oh, I always intended this movie to be sort of like a silly B movie, but I don't believe that.
I don't believe that either. And as you were saying that about Old, I was like, is this Shyamalan's multiverse?
I'm sure he would like all of his movies to be connected and to have his own sort of Stephen King-like Shyamalan verse.
But one thing, though, in The Happening, I don't recall seeing, is he in The Happening?
He is Joey, the voice on the telephone.
With Zooey Deschanel. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Because I was looking for him because he always pops up in his films.
He's Joey, the voice on the phone.
Okay.
This movie, in case you aren't aware of what The Happening is, it's a 2008 M. Night Shyamalan film. He made this after he made Lady in the Water and that tanked. So this was his sort of hoping to have a comeback movie, but it ended up being even kind of more critically reviled than Lady in the Water. He had to shop this around to a bunch of different studios after Lady in the Water. He wasn't getting the treatment that he had been getting before, where I think it was Touchstone Pictures originally, which is Disney, were financing all his movies. And then after Lady in the Water, which he took to some other studio, I can't remember now, after that he had to go hat in hand to studios.
Well, I mean, I recall with us just rewatching this the other night, at the beginning, I was like, I don't recall this production company or this studio like at the beginning of the film. Like, right. It was something that I was completely confused.
I found out the answer to that, okay. If you'd like to know.
Yeah, I would.
He got production money from an Indian financing company.
Okay.
That one of those, Blinding Edge, I believe, is his company.
Uh-huh. But the other one was like Looking Glass or something. I can't remember what it was. It was something else.
Yeah, I don't remember, but it was an Indian financing company. You know, he's Indian. He's of an Indian heritage, so... Yeah. He got money that way, which good for him.
Yeah. I'm glad that you figured that out because we were both just like, huh. And if I remember correctly, this is the film before The Last Airbender.
Correct.
Yeah. And that is the only Shyamalan film I believe I have not seen in the theater.
You would not be able to take it. Let me tell you that right now. Well, because it's based on a famous and supposedly really, really good, it's not an anime, but it's very influenced by anime. I believe Nickelodeon put it out. Avatar, The Last Airbender, which, not to go down this rabbit hole too much, but the reason why the Shyamalan movie was called The Last Airbender is because James Cameron was putting out Avatar. They're not related at all.
Right, but it was around the same time.
Yes. So he had to call his adaptation of the cartoon, which is called Avatar, The Last Airbender, he had to just call it The Last Airbender. But regardless of that, the movie is awful. And people that love that cartoon, which it has major fans, all hate the movie because it's just a bastardization of it.
Now, was Shyamalan's live action or was it a cartoon also?
Oh, no, live action.
I never saw this and I never will.
No, I wouldn't recommend it for you on any level. This is like fantasy that you could not hang with at all. It's really bad and hard to watch. I would argue that that is his most flat out terrible movie. Like, it really doesn't have any real watchability or value, especially if you're a fan. Whereas, like, as bad as this movie that we're about to talk about is, this movie's very watchable, in my opinion. I mean, now you and I know we've both seen this movie a couple of times together.
Oh, yeah.
I saw this in the theater.
As did I.
Yeah, I went, you know, to laugh at it. I went with all the cinephile guys when it came out, but we were like, ooh, hoo, hoo, a new M. Night movie, we gotta go. And we had a great time watching it because it is kind of a hilarious movie.
Well, I went hopeful as always, going in to see Shyamalan again with my friend Roxanne. And, you know, I wasn't going there to make fun of anything. I was there with an open heart and an open mind. And I remember during the movie, we were just like, oh, my God, like while it's happening.
Right.
And we didn't even save it until after we got out of the theater. But we were just like,
I would say as soon as Mark Wahlberg shows up in this movie, the laughs start coming. But let's talk first about the concept of The Happening. We'll just sort of break this up into different sort of subjects, okay, rather than go through the plot, quote-unquote, of this movie.
No, we shouldn't do that to anyone.
So the basic concept of this movie, spoiler alert if you haven't seen The Happening, is that there's this strange thing happening in the world where people are suddenly compelled to kill themselves. They start to sort of talk in gibberish. They walk backwards in many cases. And then they kill themselves, often in some pretty hilarious ways.
Oh, yeah.
But also kind of shocking.
I would say that, like, the beginning of this film, it has promise. And some really disturbing images. Like, I think when the girls are sitting on the bench, and what always triggers with this event is there's usually like one person who's seems to be aware of what is going on.
Yeah.
But everybody else is like kind of frozen, or like in this case, this girl sitting on a bench with her friend, and she kind of starts to speak in gibberish or kind of repeating herself, saying it's just, you know, she's not making sense. And then in this case, the friend is like, what's going on? Are you seeing this? Like, what, are you okay? And, you know, it's this kind of totally unsettling scene. And her friend, who's like reading a book and not making sense, pulls one of those hairpin. Sure, that's what it is. I'm like, what are they? It looks like a knitting needle, but you put it in your hair, and pulls it out and just stabs herself right in the neck.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. And like throughout the movie, this happening is going to happen. And there's a couple of pretty intense sequences. Like early on in the movie, we also get that scene with the construction workers.
That's like,
basically, these two construction workers are talking at a job site, and then suddenly a body hits the ground, and it's one of their coworkers, and they're like, oh my God. And then all the construction guys start dropping off of the building. And it's actually really well shot. Like that one shot of them just jumping off the top of the buildings is haunting.
Yeah, because at first we're just seeing them hit the ground, which is enough. Construction's so dangerous as it is. And then, yeah, the shot you're speaking of where we get the POV from the ground up. And seeing them, like, literally, they're just, like, walking off the edge of the building or their scaffolding or whatever, just, like, taking a step and just, like, just all the way down.
And it should be said that although Shyamalan, before this, had done horror-related movies, so The Sixth Sense is horror-adjacent for sure, and Signs is pretty intense, he hadn't done R-rated until this movie. And this movie definitely has moments of gore that are R-rated. Like when we see the bodies of these construction workers, they're messed up.
Totally. There's another scene later in the movie when they get to New Jersey, into Princeton, which this one always stuck with me. Like this is the one scene that I think about when I think of The Happening, with John Leguizamo. And he's in this car with these other folks trying to get to Princeton. And they're in like a suburban area. And they see all these landscaper trucks parked in the neighborhood. And then they look up and they're all just have hung themselves like from cords or whatever in the trees.
That reminds me of the scene in The Sixth Sense where Cole, the little boy, is in the school and he sees people from like the 1600s or whatever hanging in the rafters as ghosts.
Yeah.
Similar to that. Yeah. So there are moments in this movie that actually I think have some real power.
Yep.
But conversely, there's also some moments in this movie which are hilarious. And I think unintentionally so, or I don't know, maybe unintentionally. At one point, a group of survivors is trying to, you know, escape this happening. And they are on a hill and they look down in this suburban neighborhood and they see this group of people like taking a like giant lawnmower, like one of those riding lawnmowers. And like one guy just lays down in front of it and it just mows him over. Pretty hilarious.
There's also that scene in the diner with Mark Wahlberg, which we'll get more into that in a minute, with John Leguizamo's daughter. And, you know, she's sad because she's not with her parents. And so he's like cheering her up with his mood ring, which that just comes back one too many times.
Yeah.
But then the lady sitting next to him, and this is also, this is 2008. So this is like pretty high tech. You know, she's got like a smartphone and she's like, oh, my God, look what my friend just sent me. And so then the camera zooms in on the smartphone and it's this video from the zoo, I guess in Philadelphia or somewhere, where this guy just walks into like the tiger or lion enclosure, big cats.
It's a zookeeper like our friend Jake Schachter. Sure.
Yes, it's just like what happened to Jake Schachter. At the Franklin Park Zoo, yeah. Yeah, he just walks in, though, and, like, just puts his hand out. And so, I mean, like, it's just a free-for-all. Like, the cats, like, just attack him and are just... And it stays on this video for so long. This is supposed to be harrowing in some way, but it's just hilarious.
Well, one member of the family that didn't find it hilarious was our dog, Annie. She really responded to this scene where the zookeeper is getting his arms torn off by lions, essentially.
Yeah, Annie was on high alert.
This had a lot of impact for her.
Real impact for Annie. However, this whole film is just plagued with certain things that, like you said, is it supposed to be humorous or is it just like... so horribly miscast. It's just tonally bizarre.
Well, let's get into the cast.
Yes.
Because our main character slash hero is played by Mark Wahlberg. I believe his name is Elliot.
Yes.
And it's great because the opening scene we get with this character, he's a science teacher at like a high school in Philadelphia, because everything always takes place in and around Pennsylvania and Philadelphia in M. Night Shyamalan's universe. If you know anything about this movie and Mark Wahlberg, I mean, it's just, it starts off with this monologue about how the bees, what about the bees? The bees are disappearing. What do you have to think about that? What do you think's going on? And he's just so out of his depth as a science teacher. And I know like science teachers aren't necessarily like super geniuses or anything, but he can't even pull it off at all. Like everything he says, every line he delivers sounds like a question in this movie. Like it's always going up. Should we go over there? It's like that, hey, how's your mother? Like Saturday Night Live routine where they made fun of Mark Wahlberg. It is the funniest, unintentionally funny Mark Wahlberg performance I think ever put on film.
He is one word throughout the entire film is just bewildered.
Yes.
Like that's like if I had
puzzled.
Puzzled the entire time, even when he doesn't necessarily need to be puzzled. Like he and I read this article earlier today in Variety and it was pretty recent and it was actually interesting because Zooey Deschanel, who we'll talk about, who's also in the film, felt that The Happening was stylized horror that maybe people didn't get it. And, you know, so it goes on and she's, you know, talking about, you know, that maybe this wasn't the right genre for her. You know, she does better in comedy and, sure. You know, sure, of course, that's what we mostly know her from. But she really enjoyed working with M. Night and, you know, she trusted him and she said, you know, that she thought it was supposed to be something more like The Birds.
Well, that's what he was saying. He thought it was going to be his The Birds, basically.
And, you know, she really enjoyed working with Mark Wahlberg as well.
Sure.
So what was interesting was Mark Wahlberg, they took it back to when he was at a press conference for The Fighter in 2013. And he revealed that Amy Adams had been in contention for a, quote, bad movie that he did, and that she, quote, dodged a bullet by turning it down. And he's like, I don't want to tell you what movie. All right. The Happening. Fuck it. It is what it is. Wahlberg said at the time, fucking trees, man. The plants. Fuck it. You can't blame me for not wanting to try to play a science teacher. At least I wasn't playing a cop or a crook. I just love that he was like, he wanted to play a science teacher.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Look, and you know what? I'm going to say this out front. Like, it's a bad performance. And Zooey Deschanel, who I normally find very charming, her performance is also bad. And I don't necessarily think it's her fault. Because these characters, like, what are they? I can't even tell you what is going on with them. I mean, we have this husband and wife, yes, right?
And that's who they are. We've got, it's Elliot and Alma. Mark Wahlberg and Zooey Deschanel, and they're married.
They're married, but they're having marriage troubles. But we don't really get what the problem is. She went out for tiramisu with some guy at work.
So Joey.
Joey, who is voiced by M. Night Shyamalan, as I've said. So yeah, this is a minor infidelity, right? But we don't ever understand what it is that drove her to go have tiramisu with Joey.
No, their whole thing is just so bizarre. And I mean, I guess because we're also just thrown into the happening, but we don't, I mean, there's time where we could have gotten some decent backstory, but it's all presented so weird and they're so goofy together.
Yeah.
And I mean, I love Mark Wahlberg. Like, you know, like I love The Fighter. I love Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
Like when he is in a role that works for him, he kills it.
But when he's in a role that doesn't work for him, he's terrible.
Yeah.
He's either really good or really bad.
Yeah.
And this is really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Same with, I love Zooey Deschanel also. I think she's so cute and charming. But in this, she's also just like even more than bewildered. She's just like on another level of like,
she seems like she's on some sort of psycho.
Medicated.
Yes, my medication. It feels like the directions she was given was stare as wide-eyed as you can. And she's already got big eyes.
Wide-eyed. And that's like, I mean, that's going to happen anyway. She's got these big blue, beautiful eyes. But yeah, she just like is, she just doesn't look like she knows what's going on. And yeah, their relationship, we're supposed to have like that they're, it's a whole thing because when John Leguizamo, who's the math teacher,
right,
at school, which I buy him more of, or as a math teacher. I was like, okay, I could,
sure,
more than Mark Wahlberg as the science teacher.
Right. But I'd buy a head of lettuce more as a science teacher than Mark Wahlberg.
I know. Bless his heart. But yeah, so when this whole thing starts going down in the classroom, which by the way, I am going to touch on this because this scene is just so great where he's just going on and on about the bees disappearing, which they are. There's some truth to that. And I don't disparage him, you know, wondering what about the bees. But it's like he's just really doing that thing where, and I cringe in real life when like some teacher's like trying too hard to get everybody to engage.
Yeah.
That type of thing where he's like, come on, what do you think about it, Sebastian?
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, well, Jennifer, get in here. And then he like picks on this like good looking kid and tells him that he's like not going to be good looking for long. So he should like try harder because his ears and nose are going to get huge or something.
But then he's like, no, I'm just joking. You're going to be a heartthrob forever,
yeah,
buddy.
The kid's like, oh, ha ha. But yeah, so then, you know, they're alerted that this thing is going on. It's happened in New York and they're worried that it's coming to Philly. And you know, John Leguizamo's like, I'm going to go get my wife and kid and, you know, I'm going to get us tickets. We can go to my mom's like out in the country or something because they're thinking that it's only happening in major metropolitan areas.
Right. They think it's a terrorist attack,
yes,
some sort of neurotoxin terrorist attack, which would make sense,
yeah,
for them to think. What we're going to find out is that it's plant life trying to kill us through putting some sort of pheromones in the air or something. Although we never have that confirmed.
Nope.
That's just a theory,
yep,
as posited by our science teacher hero. But anyway, I think that's really what it's supposed to be, is nature's trying to kill us for encroaching upon it, basically.
And I'm here for all of that. We deserve it.
Yeah.
So if that's what it is, sure. But wow, the execution.
Fuck you, Avatar. The Happening got there first.
It did. It really did. And this is when Mark Wahlberg feels compelled to tell John Leguizamo that he and Alma are having some troubles, but don't act weird.
Right.
Then, of course, his good buddy is like, I'm going to tell you something that a friend should tell you. I saw her on your wedding day and she was crying.
That scene is so weird.
It's so weird. And he's like,
and that never comes back.
No, except later on when he goes off to try to find his wife. And so he's leaving the daughter with them.
Yeah.
Because she's going to be safer, I guess. Because they're going into the country and he's going to Princeton, New Jersey, right?
Yes.
So Alma, Zooey Deschanel, takes the little girl's hand, which I can't even remember her name. And he's like, don't take my daughter's hand if you don't mean it.
Yeah.
Like he's implying that she's, because, you know, I guess she didn't want to have a family right away. And so he's implying that she's like got one foot out the door or something. But it's so like not deserved.
They drop a line where Mark Wahlberg says something like, oh yeah, we didn't want to have kids right away or something like that.
Yeah, and you know where that comes from is later when they're like traipsing around out in the country with these two rando like juveniles and the kids start asking him all these questions about like and it's so awkward and they're just like, do you have kids? No, why not? That's where we learn that she didn't want to have kids right away.
None of the dialogue that happens in this movie sounds like real people talking to each other at all. It sounds like an alien wrote this script thinking that this was how human beings communicate to each other. Because we're going to get scene after scene after scene of really odd exchanges. I mean, we get the scene with Zooey Deschanel talking to Joey on the phone, like, we had tiramisu one time. And then we get the weird couple with the hot dogs in the plant nursery. Like,
so like hot dog obsessed. You like hot dogs. They're really the perfect food. And like, and they're just like, they're so weird and quirky. And it's just like, these are some good ideas as far as like overall with, you know, what is this thing happening? I mean, they kind of did something later, like with a Bird Box. It was a kind of in the same vein.
I agree with you. This is, you know what this would be good as? A radio play. Okay?
Yeah.
You know, like this is a poor idea for a film because what's going to end up happening later in the movie is we're going to get scenes of people running away from wind.
Yeah.
Which is not cinematic.
No.
As like a radio play or like a podcast, yes. I think it would be kind of cool. Like you could really play with sound and, you know, you wouldn't have to necessarily see these things to sort of understand what was going on.
Or it would be really great as a novel.
As a novel,
if
possibly.
Somebody like could write it.
The problem is it's been put into a visual medium and there's literally nothing visually going on other than wind.
And people eventually killing themselves,
right.
Which that is the, you know, the shock that you're getting. But yeah, like the actual wind, the rustling that's coming.
It's ridiculous.
It is. And the dialogue is just not great.
Well, and I mean, I think in some cases it's supposed to be funny, like the hot dogs, but is it funny?
Is it? Like, that's the thing is what I'm saying is like, yeah, it's funny. It's all odd. But if you're going to make this a B movie, then you got to lean all the way into that. You know where it works is Black Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Is because even though it's a pretty scary horror film, unsettling, it's Bob Clark, who's great. And so you still have that dark humor in there. So there are things that happen like with Margot Kidder throughout that are really uncomfortable, but also funny that she's saying, and there's a humor in there. And then like, even with like the townies, when they come to the door, when they're like out looking for the girl who's missing or whatever, and they're like really weird and it totally works for me. And this, I'm like, what am I supposed to be feeling here?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And I think Black Christmas is a great example. I think he is trying to do that. He just can't. He's not funny. That's the problem. Bob Clark is funny.
That's what I'm saying. He's great.
He's made comedies.
Oh, whereas, Christmas Story, classic. You know, it's like, yeah, he knows what he's doing. But this, it would have been good if he collaborated with somebody on this.
I mean, there's that scene where Mark Wahlberg talks to the plastic plant.
Yeah.
That's obviously supposed to be funny.
And that is pretty funny, actually, because it's like he has given over to the theory that it's the plants and he's in this room. They're out in the country of Philadelphia somewhere. And
Pennsylvania is the name of the state. And there's a lot of country there. Trust me.
They're out in the country of Pennsylvania. way out in the country. And they stumble upon a model home, which you also had some problems with this, but they're in there, and you know, there's like fake books, and you know, Zooey Deschanel and the little girl leave the room, and so he's in this room with this plant, and so he starts trying to reason with the plant, and then goes over and he turns the leaf over, and it's plastic, and that did kind of work. But yeah, you had some issues with the model home because you were like, they found a map in there,
right.
And you were like, why would there be a map in there when everything, like the food on the table, the sushi, all that stuff was all fake because it's supposed to be a model home, and why would they have like a working map in a drawer?
It makes no sense.
No.
One thing I do have to give the movie some credit for, they've been in several groups of people throughout the movie, but one working theory is that if it's too many people in the group, then the mysterious neurotoxin affects the group. And like Mark Wahlberg posits that it's because the plants are feeling threatened by too many people coming near them at one time or something. So really running out into the country was a bad idea. Like the things were that were happening in the city were only happening around parks.
Right.
You know, so if you just stayed in your apartment in the city, you probably would have been more safe than what they're chosen to do. But anyway, so they've been in these different groups of people. At one point, there's this goofy army guy who tries to rally everybody into a group. And that's another example of comedy that I don't think is working at all.
No, they come upon him because they are like going down a road and they see in the distance there's a bunch of bodies in the road. So they like decide to go back in another direction. And then this private army guy comes along from another direction that they were considering going. And he's like, no, don't go that way. And then like every direction, people are all coming in now saying like 5 miles back, 6 miles back or whatever. So now it's like a crowd.
Yeah.
And so then the army guy tries to organize them, and they, you know, split up into groups and then dissipate into smaller groups. And one scene that I think is kind of good and unsettling is they start hearing gunshots.
Yeah.
And they realize that these people are killing themselves.
Yes. Like the army guy probably took out his gun.
He did take out his gun because he started doing like, my rifle is my friend, and like doing all the army things that they say.
Right. And early in their movie, we got a scene of somebody like a cop shooting himself, and then somebody gets out of their car and takes the cop's gun and shoots himself. So this sort of sets up this scenario without actually needing
to see it again.
We're just hearing this from over the hill after we've seen, like you said, we've seen the army guy do the weird thing, so we know it's coming. Yeah, it is kind of unsettling because you just keep hearing this gunshot, so you know that everybody's just picking up the gun and shooting themselves with it. But what I was going to say is I appreciate that at this point they've broken into a smaller group and they're with these two kids, one of whom is Spencer Breslin, who is Abigail Breslin's brother.
Yes.
He was in some kids' movies in the late 90s and early 2000s. Yeah. You know, so you think like, okay, these kids are going to be along for the ride now. But they end up going to this, like, I don't know, survivalist's house somewhere. And they're hungry and they want to get in and ask for food or whatever. And they're knocking at the door and they realize that there's somebody inside, maybe more than one person. And the person inside is telling them to go away because they don't want them to let in the toxin or whatever. But Spencer Breslin just keeps trying to get in and the fucking people shoot the kids.
Yeah, that's something that I forgot when we were watching it this time. I was like, oh yeah, the kids get fucking killed. They get, and it's brutal. Spencer Breslin like totally gets blown away like in the chest or something.
Yep.
Shot. It's a shotgun. And then the other kid who's like still like over there doing stuff, like then he gets shot in the head.
Yep.
That's it. Like now it's just the three of us.
Yeah. And like Mark Wahlberg picks him up and you see like the back of his
head is blown off. Yeah.
Pretty intense.
It's brutal. Like, yeah, you kind of think like, oh, the kids, it's going to be safe.
Yeah.
Nope. Not in this film.
I appreciate that.
I do. I appreciate that he went there.
But the main little girl that's along for the ride, who's the daughter of John Leguizamo and is now their de facto adopted daughter and will be at the end of the movie, She does not get killed. She gets saved. And she just kind of stops talking at some point in the movie. I think we're supposed to think she's so freaked out that she just sort of clams up.
I mean, they had kind of touched on that earlier, that she was freaked out, like back at the diner. That's when Mark Wahlberg was doing the whole thing with the mood ring.
Yeah.
You know, she was like, oh, it's this color. That means you're going to laugh or something like that, you know. So, yeah, sure, that's fair. I don't know what else she really had to do. She's just with them. She's a little kid. But the next place that they end up is quite a treat.
They end up at the house of this older woman who's played by the great Betty Buckley.
Love her so much.
Love her and Carrie.
Love her and Eight Is Enough.
We're introduced to her. They come upon this sort of cottagey type of house. And Mark Wahlberg goes around the back and there's like a little porch there. And Betty Buckley's just sitting there drinking lemonade or whatever. And she says the immortal line, why you eyeing my lemon drink?
It's so weird. It's just so weird. He comes up and he rings a bell. And she's like, that's for my Labrador or something like that, like, or my dog or whatever. And then then she delivers that line. And then she's like, I guess I got to invite you in for supper.
This whole sequence is so strange. So she invites them in, but then she's completely hostile to them the whole time.
Oh, yeah. The little girl tries to reach for like a biscuit or a cookie or something. And she like pops her on the hand.
Yeah.
And then gives her a cookie.
Don't take what isn't yours or whatever.
And she doesn't like have radio or anything like that. And he was like, well, I need to let you know that. She was like, I don't want to know what's going on.
She doesn't even have a telephone.
Nothing.
Which, it's just such a weird character design, because it's like, on one hand, the movie requires that she lets them in so that the next 20 minutes can sort of deal with her and her place that she's living in. But she doesn't seem like she wants them there at all.
She doesn't want them there at all. She's not well.
Right. We're to assume she's mentally ill. At one point, she literally, you know, she accuses him of trying to steal from her. And you're going to kill me in my sleep, aren't you? Or whatever.
Well, he like wanders and he's looking for her. And okay, not before, because she provides some very important information here, which I brought up to you later, as she's talking about how like the guest house or whatever that other house is over there used to be like where they would hide slaves.
Yeah.
So there's a tube that runs underground. And so it sounds like you're in the same room.
Even though this house, which isn't really a house, it's just a structure, really.
Right.
But it's, I don't know, 100 yards away.
Definitely. Yeah. So she plants that in there. So that's coming back. And it does. But yeah, she flips out on Mark Wahlberg because he's just looking for her. He can't find her. And he wanders into her bedroom. She's got this like super creepy doll on her bed.
Oh, yeah. The doll.
Which was great. And he even says to himself, like, I'm dealing with the crazy lady or something like that, right? Like, yeah. Or so she's insane or something. And then turns around and there, that's where she's like, you're gonna steal from me and you're gonna kill me in my sleep.
Yeah.
And just wigging out. I think that's when she goes outside after that.
Yeah, like she goes out into her garden and then, of course, the wind comes and she gets affected by the neurotoxin or whatever. And then we get this amazing sequence where he's like locked himself inside the house and she's outside the house just smashing her head in through the windows. Poor Betty Buckley just smashing her head in the windows. It's pretty awesome.
Like the true professional that she is. She's like fucking like all in. Yeah. She's such a great actor. Even in this weird role, weird film that she's, you know, signed on to, she's like 100% selling it. She's creepy.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's a stunt person, but there is a shot where she smashes her head into the window and you see like the glass sticking out of her face and stuff.
Yeah, it's great. And then of course, now she's let the neurotoxin all into the house. So he has to go and like barricade himself in like some small room, which just happens to be able to talk to where Zooey Deschanel and the little girl are.
This is painful. This part of the movie is so painful.
It's so painful and it's so lazy.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm supposed to care or what their problems are. That they're...
Don't you see? They're so far apart, but yet they can hear each other. there are two people who have become so separated from one another, but now at this time of duress, they just want to be together again.
Right. And then they decide that they would rather die together than survive alone in these different spaces. So they go out into like this event that's happening and all hug and embrace or whatever, and then everybody's fine. I get and I appreciate that this thing ended as quickly as it started type thing, you know, because that's how I feel this sort of thing would happen, as far as like it started at 9:30 in the morning on Tuesday and then like Wednesday at 10 a.m. it just stops. Like, I appreciate the unsettling aspect of that and just being like weird and unpredictable. What I don't appreciate is the message that they came together and then it ended. What kind of message he's like trying to tell us there? Like, that is something about their love? Because I feel like we're going there.
I think, yeah, you're probably right. And I mean, you know, he's kind of quasi-religious, I guess you would say. So, you know, I'm sure there's something there about love conquering all. However, I mean, you may appreciate the fact that, you know, this may be how things would play out in real life in terms of this happening, stopping. But it is so not dramatically satisfying. They literally just go out and look into each other's eyes and hold hands, and then they're just standing there like, oh, I guess we're not going to kill ourselves now. It is terrible. This is not the way you end a movie.
No, I couldn't agree with you. We're saying the same thing. I'm just saying, as far as like the randomness or kind of like lackluster wrapping up of this event, I can buy into that. What I can't subscribe to is this: we're holding hands, looking into each other's eyes, and everything is okay. Like, it must have passed, or it passed because we're love conquering all, or whatever it is. Like, the way that it's depicted with them, I would have appreciated it more if they just stayed in their separate spaces and fell asleep, and then like days passed and then they were like somehow walked outside and were like, oh, it's okay, or something, you know what I mean? Like, something like that. But this, like, to have like this, like, we all love each other and we're all going to be okay, it just really grinds my gears.
Well, it doesn't help matters that we don't ever understand what the hell the problem is with them. Like, bringing it back to that, like, what is their problem? I mean, he's a friggin' science teacher. What is he, spending too much time on teaching science at high school? Is he ignoring her? I mean, look, it could be any sort of mundane thing, but you need to tell us what it is.
We'll never know. And so therefore, we'll never be invested in will they make it.
Yes. And I agree with you that that's terrible regardless. But yeah, the fact that, like, I'm just like, why have they been distant with each other? Like, at least give me a friggin' reason. The movie can't even bother to do that. You just get these weird bits of information, like she was crying on the wedding day and she went out for tiramisu. We don't even hear anything about him. Like, what is his deal? He should also be guilty of something, but we don't even know what that is.
He's just guilty of loving too much.
Right. At one point, Betty Buckley has this weird conversation with him at dinner where she's like, there's always one person chasing the other. Who's the chaser in this relationship? And Mark Wahlberg's like sheepishly raises his hand like, oh, I knew it was you.
And Zooey Deschanel's like, like nodding her head. Like, it's like,
like she thinks that's cute.
Cute. Yeah. Yeah, that's not, none of the things cute about that.
So yeah, this is the climax of the movie. Basically nothing happens in the climax. And then we cut to like 6 months later, we're back in Philadelphia, and Zooey Deschanel is like waiting on her home pregnancy test.
Well, they have the little girl there with them. Yes. And she's gone off to school. She's going back to like her first day classes have started back. So Mark Wahlberg takes her to the bus. And then we see Zooey Deschanel like anxiously like looking at the stick, wondering if it's going to be one bar or two.
And this goes on for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, it's at least 3 minutes of this weird scene of her just kind of sitting there looking uncomfortable. And I mean, it's supposed to be funny, I guess. But is that funny?
I don't think so.
And then Mark Wahlberg
he just kind of is walking home after dropping off the little girl at the bus stop, and Zooey Deschanel's like waiting outside all excited and excited to tell him that they're going to have a kid. And I mean, okay, I guess this is what they needed, was a kid.
Because that's always what fixes everything.
Well, first of all, they did get an adopted kid, sure, right?
But don't you know you need to have one of your own, because that's going to solve whatever problems you had.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing here is M. Night's traditionally religious upbringing, because I never really read that about him when, you know, these movies all sort of initially came out. I should have been able to sort of see it, especially in Lady in the Water. There's so much hokey spirituality sort of stuff in there. And we all know that I'm a little spiritual challenged. I definitely don't get as into this kind of stuff as a lot of people do. But I think clearly he has religious convictions. I mean, there's so many themes in his movies about how just believing is the right thing. All you need to do is believe. Lots of faith, those types of themes in a lot of his other movies. Not so much in this movie, but in a lot of the other ones. So I think this is just some like, oh, what they needed was to be a family.
They needed a baby.
Yeah, which is terrible.
That's which is a terrible message.
Especially if you're doing a movie about like how we shouldn't like ruin the
nature
earth.
With like overpopulation and everything else. I am not as spiritually challenged, but what I do chafe against is like these outdated social contracts.
Yeah.
I guess that, you know, are like, oh, this is, you know, this is what you need. And if you do this, then this is going to save your marriage.
And, you know, full disclosure, we are a childless couple, but I don't think even parents would look at this and say, that's a great message. Yeah, this is what this relationship needed.
Well, I wouldn't definitely at this time in the world that we're living in. I guess what I'm saying is it's just like such an outdated like way of looking at things. Like that's something that I don't even think was, you know, necessarily the norm even in maybe the 80s. I'm just saying like earlier than that. That seems so archaic to be like, oh, what they were missing was a baby. And yeah, the adopted child isn't enough. They need to have their own. And now it's going to be fine.
Yeah, I just think the weird thing about it too is just I didn't get the sense that that's what they needed.
No, I don't either. This whole movie just doesn't make sense. And we, again, going back to not beat a dead horse, but it's like, we don't know enough about their relationship. And it's like, oh, well, let's just slap this could be problem on here that he wanted kids and she didn't,
right,
or
like,
something.
Why didn't just do that?
Yes. Like
why isn't
into
that in there?
Well, yeah. Why couldn't that just be it instead of her having tiramisu with Joey? What does that have to do with anything?
Right. She never says like, oh, well, I wanted a child, but he wouldn't let me. Or he says he wanted to. I don't know.
I don't know. But I mean, it's like, obviously she's caring and has some maternal instincts. I mean, she's caring for their friend's little girl. It's weird. And it just feels like he didn't know what else to do. And so he just did this. And that's the freaking end of the movie.
Well, there's another scene. But one last thing I want to say about this is like, as much as I don't like that message, if that's what it's going to be, then at least make it clear.
I agree with you. I don't like that message, but if that's your message, then own it.
Yeah.
Like have it from start to finish that this has been a whole thing.
Exactly.
And this is what their issue is. Fine. Like don't just go through 1950s marital problems and pick out like babies.
But we do get one last scene and it takes place in France, I think Paris or something. Mm-hmm. And just these two guys are walking down near, I don't know, some...
Versailles? I don't know.
Yes, some landmark.
Some landmark.
And one of them starts mumbling and, you know, people start acting weird. So it's happening again.
En français.
We thought that it was all localized to the Northeast, but no, now it's happening again.
The trees aren't happy over there either. They're not happy French trees.
Sadly, though, we never got a happening to. The world was just wanting to know what was going to happen next, but it didn't happen. Now, this movie didn't completely financially bomb. Like, it eked out a little bit of a profit, I think. It was certainly not doing the sort of numbers that his movies had been doing previously, like The Sixth Sense or whatever.
Even Unbreakable, probably.
However, the critical reaction to this was like toxic. I remember this just being the subject of derision and mockery pretty much across the board. It was on, you know, all of the worst of the year lists and all that kind of stuff. This and Lady in the Water were the 1-2 punch that really knocked him off of his high throne of being this lauded filmmaker. After this, it was kind of like he was a joke, you know, and then Last Airbender happened, and then that was terrible, and everybody hated that too. It's taken him a while to sort of come back, and I would say that he hasn't even really come back to his full height. I mean, I think now people enjoy his movies sort of more ironically. Some of his movies people like The Visit, mm-hmm. people like that. But then Old, everybody was like, what the hell is this? I mean, Split, I think people liked that one, but then he did that other one,
it was like the follow-up to Unbreakable.
Glass.
Yeah.
Which was terrible. So, you know, he's still really hit or miss, but it was like after this, everybody was like, all right, M. Night Shyamalan is a joke. Nobody took him really that seriously anymore. So, Jennifer, why do you think it failed?
Well, as we've touched on, Sebastian, throughout our coverage of this film, it's just tonally just all over the place, and it doesn't know what it wants to be. It would have benefited from, if you want it to be funny, then like maybe get some help from somebody who knows how to make funny work with uncomfortability,
mm-hmm.
because that's what you're going for here, and not backpedaling saying you want it to be a B movie when that's not what was happening here. I like all of the actors that are in it. I totally do. They just weren't meant to be in this or in these roles, at least the way that they were written. I mean, I think people showed up because it was Shyamalan, like me. I'm like, we'll be there for this next movie that we can't remember the name of that's coming out. There's certain people that will always give him a chance. So yeah, you got people in the seats, and you had actors that people like too or are familiar with. So you got people there, and then you got this. And the things that worked as far as the disturbing images and the gore. I think he did a really good job with that. But the story itself seems like he was like writing it as he went or something. Like it just doesn't seem like it really knew where it was going, and it just doesn't work.
I think it comes down to the fact that it's just a terrible screenplay. It's terrible. It's a terrible screenplay. I mean, I can forgive the acting in a sense only because I don't think the actors knew what to do because the script was terrible. There wasn't enough here for the characters. It's a goofy-ass concept, but I mean, a goofy-ass concept can work if you're hitting the tone right and if, like, you're approaching it in the right way in your script, and it's just terrible. It's a terrible script. It seems like somebody who's high on their own supply, who doesn't think that they need to work at screenwriting anymore because they've had these big hits, you know, like the success of The Sixth Sense, I think was a bad thing for M. Night Shyamalan. And I think it's because he wrote a very smart, clever, supernatural thriller, and it really blew everybody's mind with its twist and everything like that. And he just was convinced at that point that, I'm a genius, you know, and this just smacks of somebody who isn't trying hard anymore. He's not trying to make the characters believable. He's not trying to really sell the concept the way he should. It's just not working. It feels lazy and contrived, and he just thinks that his shit don't stink.
Well, I agree with all of that, and I think we're kind of saying the same thing, but I feel like he had some interesting ideas and then just thought, and that's all I need. Just exactly. Coming back to what you're saying is like, yeah, it's the screenplay is not good. But he's just like that guy that's just like, oh, well, this is what we're going to do. And it's going to be like The Birds, and, you know, how he probably pitched it to Zoe Deschanel's agent or her or whatever, you know, and people just trusted him because of The Sixth Sense. And it's like, it feels really just half-baked.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the nice things about failure is it teaches you humility, and it teaches you that, you know, not all of your ideas are great. Like, anybody can have an idea, you know? Anybody can come up with an idea of, like, what if the plants released this toxin and we all decided to kill ourselves? Like, even on the surface, I'm not like, oh, that's a humdinger of an idea. I'm like, okay, if you want to make a movie about that, sure. Okay, fine. I'll watch it, you know? But it's not that great. It's not so great that you can just coast on that.
Right, but if you had a good screenplay and you had people cast in the right roles, you could have had like a Soylent Green or some sort of environmental type film, or yeah, lean into it and make it campy as hell and make it a B movie, but it's not either.
And I also think at this point too, it was like after Lady in the Water and The Village, which actually I think is a decent movie.
Good things there.
But people were already kind of souring on him at that point. And then Lady in the Water was a real stinker. So everybody was like, okay. I think everybody was ready for him to mess up. And then this was such a mess up that it was just like, okay, this guy's done. It was such a ridiculous movie at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Like, he needed to take stock of his shit after Lady in the Water and be like, okay, I need to come up with something that would be as good as The Sixth Sense. I need to work on this script for like 5 years. I need to throw out dumb ideas like, what if the plants made us all kill ourselves? Like, you don't follow up a movie that's like critically reviled with something that's even stupider. You have to have some humility. He clearly was not able to look at himself and be like, shit, okay, I've screwed up. Now I really gotta put my energy into writing something that's really fucking good.
Well, or even with humility, have the good sense to, if you can't hash this out on your own, have the good sense and trust to collaborate with somebody who can.
Yeah.
If you're not such an egomaniac that it has to be all you, written, directed, and produced by or whatever, like if you can let go a little bit, then maybe get somebody who knows what they're doing. If you're stuck on stuck and you think this is a good idea and you can't do it yourself.
Right. And to that point, I think that he's a really good director. Like, he's a good filmmaker. Maybe he's not always great with actors, but I feel like that's more of the problem with the script. Like,
yeah,
I think he is a very talented filmmaker.
No, the movie looks good. It's well shot. It's the story and the dialogue that's shitty.
I just think he's not as talented as a writer as he thinks he is.
Well, that's kind of like Rob Zombie.
The difference is I don't really believe Rob Zombie thinks he's a brilliant screenwriter. I think Rob Zombie knows he's not that good of a screenwriter, but he doesn't really care. He just wants to make his movie happen. Whereas Shyamalan thinks he's like a genius screenwriter.
Well, that's because he knocked one out of the park early on.
Rob Zombie can't hold up anything close to like The Sixth Sense.
I agree, but we've just talked about before that like he's much better with the visuals, and like, you know, we've talked about music videos and stuff like that as well. Like, he makes things look cool, but a lot of times the story is just whatever. But yes, I do agree. He doesn't care. He's got his people. He's got his stuff. He's just going to make shit. It is a difference as far as the perception of themselves.
In Rob Zombie's case, I think with Rob Zombie, it's more a matter of like, no one else is going to make whatever the hell Rob Zombie's thinking of up in his brain. I don't think he thinks of himself as a genius, but I just don't think anybody else is going to write anything that Rob Zombie's going to want to make, because he's got such a specific thing that he's into. Whereas M. Night Shyamalan thinks he's like, you know, Hitchcock or something.
I kept thinking Hitchcock too when you were talking, by the way.
Not that Hitchcock is a writer, but you know, he just thinks of himself as that level. I will say this, if you like a good bad movie, I do think The Happening is worth watching because it's so ridiculous. It's fun to watch if you're in the right frame of mind.
Absolutely, and that's obviously why we've watched it on and off again. Oh, every few years, because you just get in the mood where you're like, yeah, let's watch that. When you mentioned this, you were like, hey, I think I want to cover The Happening. I was like, oh, hell yes. I like it, even though I know it's really not good.
I think it's an enjoyable film if you're into like psychological thrillers and
ecological terror.
Right. And you go into it with the attitude of knowing that it's silly and bad. Yes. And you're going to laugh and have a good time. And at the same time, you're going to see a few things that might actually creep you out a little bit and shock you. So that's what I think is worthwhile about it.
Agreed.
All right, well, I'm going to go wander into a lion cage and check on the bees and have myself a little lemon drink.
Why are you eyeing my lemon drink?
That about does it today for Tentpole Trauma. If you like what you heard, check out our social media presence on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just look for Tentpole Trauma. That was easy, wasn't it? If you like us, hit subscribe and leave us a sterling review on iTunes, if you dare. If you really like us, head over to patreon.com and get involved in one of our fabulous tiers. You'll be glad you did. Want to communicate with Tentpole Trauma? Send an email to tentpoletrauma@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And who knows, one day you may even get your email read on one of our shows. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you real soon.